Hello everyone, welcome to JTalk Extra Time for part one of our J2 2021 season review, and I'm joined by a very special guest, many times this season, but it's good to speak to him again. It's James Taylor. James, how are you doing?
I'm alright, thanks John, how are you?
Yeah, very well, thanks James. Enjoying a little bit of downtime after quite a hectic end to the season, as I'm sure you will understand, and perhaps have the same situation, but there's no rest for the wicked. So we'd better get on and review what was a pretty exciting, I think, 2021 for most of the J2 teams. James, the way we decided to do things was that I'm going to talk to you tonight about the teams that finished pretty much in the bottom half of the table, so from 13th down to 22nd. For some reason, when we think of the bottom half of J2, it's James Taylor seems to be the name that we arrive on. Here at JTET HQ, so I'm sorry to give you that designation, but there you go. And then I think at a later stage, I'm going to get together with Stuart Smith. We're going to talk about the top half more or less, but we are going to get accused of bias here. But just because of the way that the teams ended up points wise, we're going to add Tokyo Verde to the top half discussion, because they finished a whopping 11 points clear of 13th placed Akita. So this is our J2 bottom half of the season review, but we're going to go from 13th down to 22nd. And then I'll get back together with Stuart a later date, and we'll talk about first place down to 12th. So having said that though, James, I think what we'll do is flip the script and turn the tables and any other kind of cliches I can think of. And let me ask you about the relegation zone. And I know we've talked at length about the bottom of the J2 table this season, so that there might be some repetition, some overlap here. But as it turned out, the four teams that got relegated down to J3 from the bottom up were Matsumoto Yamaga, Giravance Kita Kyushu, Ehime, and on the last day, in dramatic fashion, Sagami Hara. So, what were your overall observations about those teams, James, and anything that we didn't cover or didn't say during sort of regular pod time that you wanted to get off your chest?
I'll start at the bottom with Matsumoto. I mean, we've said it before, but I think it bears repeating. 2 years ago, they were in J1, and next year they're going to be in J3, which is an almighty slide. And I remember back on the preseason pods, Mike was dismissive of their kind of slapdash recruitment. And he was correct, absolutely correct in that. So well done, Mike. And the fact that they had such a massive squad but still needed to re-sign Serginho mid-season is kind of further indictment of that really poor recruitment. And then further to that, the fact that Serginho led the team in assists tells you a lot about the players that were already there and how badly they were playing. But I don't think they had bad players. They got good J2 players, but they were just playing badly, and they had a really bad start with one win from their first nine. But then after the match day 12, they only won three more, and they ended the season 11 games winless, which is pretty ignominious. And I had a look through the results, because I've got to prepare, and they conceded three goals or more 13 times, and they had consecutive 4-0 losses in the middle of the season, which is just really, really bad. And that's why they finished bottom, I suppose. They didn't really have anyone to take the initiative and drag the team along. And then Serginho tried, but by that time, I think it was too late. And you got to wonder what's going to happen when they go down. It's going to be very interesting to see if anyone can stop the rot or if they're just going to plummet even further down. As for Kita Kyushu, I think we all expected this, really, after the way their successful 2020 team was kind of picked apart in the winter, wasn't it? And although Shinji Kobayashi, the manager, took them down, I think it's important to remember that when he took over, they'd just finished bottom of J3. And then he took them to fifth in J2 in just two seasons. But I guess he should take some of the blame for this, because he couldn't find solutions to any of their problems. So they didn't have any cohesion or incisive attacking play, and they had a very weak, panicky defense, and he couldn't find a way to sort that out. But what I thought was interesting was I mean, we talked before, I think, about how much they relied on Daigo Takahashi. And he actually played all 42 games in full. And he got 10 goals and 3 assists. So he was their top scorer. And in the 9 games where he scored, their record was 5 wins, 3 draws and a loss. Which to me suggests two things. One, he's very good and surely won't be at Kitakyushu next year. And two, either they relied on him too heavily or they just didn't have enough good players to lighten his load. Tomiyama had a reasonable season as well with 6 goals. But apart from that, I mean, they were never higher than 15th. And that was only for 1 week. They had a spell of 6 games unbeaten in the second half of the season, but that was too late, really. And they're one of those teams that when they go behind, they didn't gain enough points. They were ranked second bottom in that category and also second bottom in points gained after taking the lead. So finishing second bottom is entirely appropriate, I think. Moving on to Ehime, it's finally happened. I think, again, Ehime are a team that everyone predicted to struggle because they, in terms of league position, they've been on a downward trend since they joined J2, haven't they, in 2015. And again, going back to Mike on the pre-season pods, he was very sceptical of Shigenari Izumi as manager and his recruitment. And again, Mike was absolutely right. So well done, Mike. Should be enjoying this pod. but they had a couple of players who got some goals. Like Yoshiki Fujimoto got 10 and Takuma Kawamura got 9. But there wasn't much else to shout about in terms of the attack. And they had the second worst defense in J2. They had the goalie Okamoto going haywire near the end of the season, which didn't help. They were in the bottom 4 for all but 5 weeks of the season. So it's entirely predictable that they would go down. And they only won 1 game at home. And they lost 11 and drew 9, which is, I mean, I feel sorry for their supporters having to sit through a lot of that. But I remember last year, you and Stuart were discussing Ehime. And I think Stuart compared them quite unfavorably with Imabari. And it'll be interesting next year because we're going to be able to see those two teams in J3 together and the comparison's going to be much clearer. And I think it's probably not going to be terribly flattering for Ehime. I know Imabari didn't have a particularly good year this year, but they do seem like a club with much more of a project, a bit of a buzzword in football, isn't it? But I think they've got much more of a vision for what they want to be. And yeah, Ehime, they didn't really do much, did they, this year, apart from struggle. But the fourth relegated team, Sagamihara, we talked a lot about them. And I guess the only thing I really want to say is that they were unfortunate that they couldn't quite get themselves out of the relegation zone. But finishing fourth from bottom, I think, is probably very good, considering their poor start and their lack of recruitment and their general expectations. But as I said before, when I was on, they spent almost the whole season in the relegation zone. So I think getting promoted last year was a surprise. And yeah, Takagi did a really good job with the loan transfer market and in terms of his general management in the second half of the season. But yeah, it wasn't enough. They had a good go at it and they were pretty good at earning points after falling behind and, you know, scoring a lot of late goals, but they couldn't quite do it, could they? Which was a bit of a shame for them. But as a supporter of one of the teams who survived at their expense, not that much of a shame. Sorry.
Yeah, very nicely put. Yeah, I think my own sort of a spin on that is I think the bottom three, Matsumoto, Kitakyushu, and Ehime, I think we have to. You know, it's pretty clear they were the three worst teams. I mean, you know, Matsumoto finished 7 points adrift of safety. Kitakyushu and Ehime, 6 points adrift. So, you know, they were nowhere near And I don't think can have any complaints, especially not with the stats that you reeled off about, you know, home wins or lack thereof for Ehime and points gained, you know, from winning and or losing positions from Kita Kyushu was pretty bad. And Matsumoto, I think I can't add anything to what other people have said on the pod about how poor they've been. But I think Sagamihara are the only team where they can perhaps, you know, be left to kind of wonder what might have been, because they were actually quite close to getting out of it, weren't they? Perhaps a better performance on the final day away at Verdi. I suppose in the end it wouldn't have made any difference with the way the other results went, but they could have sneaked it on goal difference away from Gunma, who we'll talk about in a moment, and stayed up. So I think they will perhaps feel a sense of, well, we were very, very close to getting out of it, and maybe sort of producing an incredible turnaround after that kind of poor first half of the season. But I think there, Ehime, Kita Kyushu, Matsumoto, I don't think they can have any complaints, and they'll have to build again sort of pretty much from scratch, I suppose, in J3 next year. But I think for Sagamihara, you mentioned the word project, and I think the only mistake Sagamihara made in their project was perhaps getting promoted to J2 a little bit too early in their using a lot of buzzwords, sort of management buzzwords here, James, a bit too early in their kind of cycle, and then they didn't really seem to have any idea what to do with that. Like last winter, I mean, their sort of preparation for J2 was almost nothing. And I think that they have ended up paying a very heavy price for that, although they almost just about, you know, they almost rectified that and got away with it at the end of the season, but it wasn't to be. Okay, talking of getting away with things, James, we'll talk about three teams now who survived on the final day by hook or by crook, either with their own results or with Sagamihara losing away at Tokyo Verdy. So from 16th down to 18th, we have Omiya Ardija, Zweigen Kanazawa, and Thespa Kusatsu Gunma. And yes, Omiya ended up finishing 4 points clear of the drop, and Kanazawa and Gunma both 3 points clear. So start with Kanazawa if you like, James, because obviously that's the subject that's nearest and possibly dearest. And then tell us what you made of Omiya and Gunma as well, because I think they're obviously happy to survive, but perhaps slightly contrasting expectations for those two last season. So yeah, what did you think?
Okay, I'll talk about Kanazawa first. You go off and make a cup of tea and come back in about 10 minutes. Well, yeah, this it was a massively disappointing season from a Kanazawa's perspective. The club was aiming for 10th, because that would have been top 10, because the highest ranking in the club's history was 11th a couple of years ago. Recruited really well in the winter, with a lot of players signed on full transfers, not just loans. Had a good pre-season camp. Everything seemed to be going well. The new players are settled in quite nicely. But that first match of the season actually set the tone for all that followed. 2-0 down to Nagasaki in 15 minutes. Pulled one back, but it wasn't enough. And that was something that we saw so many times throughout the season. And it was repeated problems. There were early goals conceded. I think we led the league in goals conceded in the first 15 minutes of matches, and also possibly led the league, or might have been second worst in terms of late goals conceded. We had a real lack of incision up front for long periods of the season. The team was set up to work on short counter attacks, but a lot of the crosses were very poor and were either, you know, cleared by the first defender or just shanked out of play. And in the first half of the season, we started with Yuji Senema as one of the strikers, but he wasn't quite fast enough to latch onto the through balls. He did show his worth later in the season, though, which I'll come to in a minute. Defensively, there was lack of back post concentration. So a cross would come in and the man at the back would lose his marker or forget that he was supposed to be doing anything or something like that. So a lot of goals were conceded in that way. And the manager, Yanagishita, he wanted to stick with the same team as much as possible, which is something that I think he's quite well known for. And I think it's quite laudable that he showed confidence in these players after things were going badly, the confidence that they could make it right. But at the same time, it's something you said a few weeks ago, that if you don't change players who are playing badly, it can on some level lead to complacency. I also think it doesn't help those who are struggling and who may need just a week or two out of the firing line just to compose themselves. And then at one point we were third, about 5 or 6 weeks into the season. Kanazawa were third. They haven't been that high in the table since 2015, but we went on a 13 game winless run through, I think it was started in July and went through to the start of October. And by match day 7, we were third. And then by match day 29, we were in the relegation zone. And that winless run, just in isolation, when you say 13-game winless run, it sounds terrible. But there were games in that run where we played well and we could have won. But there was just one moment where something went wrong or someone switched off or, you know, a bit of bad luck. And I give credit to the manager and the players because they didn't give up and they did pull off some good performances in the last 10 games, and that's why we survived. And also thanks to three teams being really, really bad and one or two being slightly worse than us on balance over the season. And it was strange, like defensive frailty was a bit of a mystery to me actually, because if you consider there were some games where we actually played really, really well defensively. In match day 6, beating Machida 1-0. Match day 8, losing 1-0 to Niigata was a really good performance, apart from one moment. And then beating Niigata 1-0 on match day 32. And in the last two matches, the 2-1 win against Yamagata and the 0-0 with Kyoto, there were really, really strong defensive performances, which makes me wonder why there was this tendency to collapse and lose 4-0 and 4-1 that we had a few times. I guess maybe no one wants to watch like backs to the wall football every week, but by the same token, desperate times call for desperate measures, and I'm surprised that they didn't try that tactic a bit more, especially when things were really bad. It was disappointing that some players just disappeared, like Shimazu and Kubota went on loan to J3 sides after hardly featuring in the first half of the year. Motozuka disappeared and he's since been released. Ishio, don't know if he was injured or not, but Hodolfo, I don't know if I think he was injured for a bit and then he came back and then he disappeared. And he played in the friendly match against Fukui, but didn't play in any first team matches. And Takayasu's hardly been seen as well. But despite all that, there were some bright spots in the gloom. There were some really good moments. For example, in match day 5 against Sagamihara, there was Romulo was through on goal. And Honoya Shoji just appeared from nowhere and slid through and nicked the ball off his toes when he was about to shoot. It's like something out of a cartoon. It was brilliant. Yuji Senema's goal of the season against Iwata. And then his two late goals against Yamagata, which basically saved our season. Goto's penalty save against Niigata was great. And Niwa ending his 18-game goal drought in front of the home fans against Matsumoto was brilliant. He had a career best 9 goals this year as well. It was good. So I guess, well, maybe perhaps because of the gloom that those moments shone more brightly. And a couple of young players came through, like Rikiyasu and Nagamine, which is promising for the future. But overall, this was a disappointing season for Kanazawa.
No, I think, well, before you go on there, James, yeah, on Kanazawa, I'm really pleased that there were some positives as well about, you know, as well as staying up. You mentioned the high points. I don't think any of us are going to forget that, you know, that win over Yamagata in the penultimate game where, Yuji Senuma just, I don't know what he had for breakfast, but, I would like some of it. It was amazing scenes. And, I hope they can, we don't want to get into kind of a season preview territory just yet, but, I really hope that lessons that can be learned from this year are applied to next season, because I think Kanazawa is the kind of team where with the right kind of again, let's use the word project again, because it seems to be coming up a lot tonight. With the right kind of project, there's no reason why they couldn't be first of all mid-table in J2, and then maybe look even towards the playoffs, you know, in the more long term. So I wasn't surprised to see them in the bottom half, but I was surprised to see them struggle as much as they did. And to be honest, at one point, I probably didn't tweet these things out in case you saw them, but I was pretty convinced that they were going to be occupying the fourth relegation spot and not Sagamihara. To be honest, though, at varying times, I was probably also pretty sure that Omiya and Gunma were going down, and they survived as well. So what did you make of Omiya and Gunma's 2021 seasons?
Omiya, that was I think I was looking back over the last few years, and 2019 they finished third, and they only missed out on automatic promotion on the final day because they drew with Kanazawa. I was at that match actually, and maybe it's too simplistic to draw a cause and effect from that, but it's startling how they missed out on automatic promotion, and in the next year they finished 15th, and in this year they finished 16th, but for much of this year, it looked like they were going to finish lower than that. But they're a bit of an outlier among these lower teams because they did score a lot of goals, thanks to Kurokawa and Kawata, particularly. But their defense was dreadful, and they had, as we've said before, they were dozy and they had a tendency to shoot themselves in the foot quite a lot, which they carried on right up to the last game of the season because they're committed. And they went three months without winning as well, didn't they? Which, to finish as high as 16th after going 3 months without winning, I think is quite impressive. Because they beat Nagasaki 4-0 on match day 5, which was a fantastic result, and then didn't win again for months. And after the mid-season break, they turned it around and they ended up doing just enough. And that doziness meant that they had to earn a lot of their points after falling behind. But they ended up dropping a lot after taking the lead, so they're just too inconsistent, I suppose. But not damaging to a terminal effect. I suppose they were okay in the end. Overall, though, nowhere near good enough for a club of that stature, I suppose. And with the budget that they have, or that I imagine they have, because they have a famous company as their main sponsor. I mean, I don't know anything about what goes on behind the scenes, but I think there were a few players that stood out, though, like Kurokawa is their top scorer. He got 9 goals and 3 assists, which he's improving every year as well, which is good. And Kazuaki Mawatari was very impressive, and he scored that fantastic free kick against, I think it was Sagamihara, which is worth looking up again because that was brilliant. And I see that he's being linked with J1 teams, particularly Urawa, because of the Rodriguez connection. So it'd be good if he's done enough to get himself a move. But I think, Omiya were really disappointing, but also quite entertaining to watch. Plenty of goals in their games. And Gunma, we talked about them last time I was on. Their ambition surely was just to survive, and they did it. So, mission accomplished. They improved on their position from last year, although they actually won fewer games and earned fewer points, which is an interesting quirk. And they changed their manager in July, and they were 20th when they changed their manager. And after that, 2 weeks later, they moved out of the relegation zone and they stayed out. So I guess in that respect, it was a good decision. But I still think they relied too heavily on Genki Omai, which is understandable because he's a really top quality player who is still quite surprising to see him at Gunma. I don't want to be disrespectful to Gunma, but I'm still kind of surprised that he's there. And a lot of people look at him and think he looks really unfit, but he's a professional footballer, so he's obviously not that unfit. He just looks round, but his skill and awareness really make up for his lack of mobility. And when he wasn't in the squad for a few games in mid-season, they did okay. A couple of wins, a couple of losses and a draw, which wasn't bad, but he was still their top scorer and he led them in assists and he took all their set pieces. And he's their captain. And so without him, as I said before, I don't think they have much really. They've got probably a big debt owed to Keiki Shimizu in goal, because he turned in some great performances, especially near the end of the season, which they really needed. And Hiroto Hata at centre-back, who I saw on, I think it was on the Football Lab website, led J2 in clearances. So you mentioned him a couple of weeks ago as well, actually, as one that's impressed. But I just think, I guess this season, maybe you could sum it up. I remember watching the highlights of their 6-2 loss to Kofu. And there was a bit, I think it was after I don't know, the third or the fourth goal went in. And the camera cut back to Omai standing in the centre circle with his hands on his hips, letting out a massive sigh. And I think that was an image to summarize perhaps quite a lot of their season.
Sort of like Cristiano Ronaldo.
Well, it wasn't even like I guess Ronaldo, you kind of, I don't know, at least the impression I get would be that he was getting angry at teammates. But I think Olmo was just kind of, oh, God, not again.
Am I going to have to score direct from a corner again?
No. Yeah. But and I think the fact that they kept it in the highlight package was quite quite unusual and quite interesting for DAZN, bearing in mind they leave out much more pertinent moments in some matches. But yeah, I mean, for them, as everybody know what they're aiming for beyond surviving. So surviving is good for them, I suppose.
I think when we just put Olmia and Gunma together, you know, for a moment, it's a really interesting case study and sort of that expectation, you know, from pre-season. And then when it comes to the kind of season review or post-mortem, it can have a really big impact on how you view the season. I mean, Gunma have had a successful season by, you know, compared to sort of pre-season expectations and pre-season targets, haven't they? Their goal is always to avoid relegation, and that was kind of even more focused this season because the number of relegation places was doubled. So instead of having a goal of finishing third from the bottom, their goal was now to finish fifth from bottom, and by hook or by crook, and it certainly wasn't pretty at times, especially that last month or so of the season, but they managed to get the job done. So you would think, you know, uninitiated, uninitiated person would look at the league table and see that Omiya have collected one more point than Gunma, and infer that Omiya have also had a successful season. But I think Omiya's season was pretty much an unmitigated disaster. And I think you mentioned a word you used was stature, which I think is an important one because it's not about club size. Omiya is not the biggest club in the league or Japan. But in terms of the stature and pre-season expectations, to have only finished 4 points clear of the relegation zone, only 9 wins from 42 matches, I mean, it's pretty pathetic stuff, really. And again, Mike Innes has had far too much, been bigged up far too much already on this pod, but he also, I think, called it in pre-season. He said, this looks like a bit of a mess of a squad, and the manager looks perpetually nervous.
Emojis.
He said that things weren't going to go very well, and he was proven absolutely right. And I think we mentioned that on another day, Sagamihara might have escaped the clutches of the relegation zone. I think there must be a parallel universe where Omiya didn't, you know, they got relegated instead because at times they were, the word dozy came up a few times, didn't it, in our discussions about them. And I think they were dozy so often that it could have been fatal, it could have been terminal. So I think what will be a problem for Omiya going forward is the kind of Jeff syndrome of, like, for example, they finished 16th this year. If they make it to mid-table next year, that will be framed as being a successful improvement. But what it's actually doing is kind of, you know, moving their expectations downwards each time, which is something that Jeff suffered from for a while and may yet suffer from in the future. You know, so we have the situation now where Jeff finishing, you know, eighth is celebratory, you know, whereas it's still sort of a failure in the grand scheme of things. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see what happens at Omiya next year and Gunma, of course. But I suppose, yeah, we have to congratulate all three teams, because when the chips, you know, when it came down to it in the last couple of games, they needed to avoid relegation, and that's what they did. I think if you look at the bottom seven teams, though, James, just my opinion, but I think most of the teams in that bottom seven are kind of, it's no surprise to see Ehime down there because they're always down there. Sagamihara, newly promoted team, Kitakyushu were sort of asset stripped to a ridiculous extent last winter. Kanazawa, I wasn't really feeling them in pre-season. I thought they might have done a little bit better than 17th, but to see them in the bottom sort of third of the table is not surprising. Gunma as well are always down there. But Olmia and Matsumoto, for them to be in that bottom third of teams and for Matsumoto to be bottom, pretty shocking stuff for both sides. So I think Olmia will have to look at Matsumoto as a kind of cautionary tale of how badly it can go if you don't get the recruitment right in the winter. So all right, that's enough doom and gloom I think for now. So let's finish on a bit more of a positive note, James. So there were three teams, 13th down to 15th, who more or less weren't in the relegation conversation to any great extent, you know, for the majority of the campaign. So Akita, in their debut J2 season, finished a very respectable 13th place on 47 points. That's the full 9 points clear of the relegation zone. Just below them were Tochigi in 14th place, and then Yamaguchi in 15th. They had 43 points, so just 5 clear of the relegation zone, but pretty good value for survival, as it turned out. So Akita, Tochigi and Yamaguchi, James, what did you make of their sort of 2021 campaigns?
I'll start with Yamaguchi, because I think they kind of went under my radar really this year. And what I'd forgotten was that last year they finished bottom. So to finish 15th is a massive improvement, and it may be a surprising one for many people. Having looked at the results in, you know, the league table as the season progresses, they were pretty consistently lower mid-table all year, and they were only in the relegation zone for 5 weeks, and they were only in the top half for 1 week, but they were fairly consistent with their position. I was slightly surprised by the timing of their manager change. I thought it was a bit unusual. They were on a short losing streak, but they were still going quite steady position-wise. And bearing in mind how much they'd improved on last year, I thought it was a little bit odd. But they tightened up their defence based on last year as well. And the goalie Kentaro Seki led the league in saves. What I liked about Yamaguchi when I watched them was that they weren't afraid to get stuck in and play a bit rough if necessary, which might have been what they were missing last year. I don't know. I don't think I saw enough of them last year, or at least I can't remember. Particularly from Yuki Kusano up front. He was pretty feisty. I remember seeing him getting stuck in quite a bit, especially towards the end of the season. And I think their most impressive result was the 4-1 win over Kanazawa in match day 25. And because it was, at the time, it was important because both teams were still obviously in danger of relegation. And it was one of the results that helped Yamaguchi kind of feel slightly at distance from that danger. And I remember it was a really even first half, but then Yamaguchi came out and blew Kanazawa away in the second half. So yeah, Yamaguchi, they should be pleased. I think a big improvement over last year, and kind of slipping under the radar to finish fairly comfortably. I think they confirmed their survival with a couple of weeks to go, which, maybe when you say it like that, sounds a bit tighter or a bit more stressful than it, perhaps it was. But with so many teams below them, it was, I suppose, unlikely that any of them would have overtaken them. Yeah, so they could be pleased, I think. As for Tochigi, also I think they could be probably pleased. I guess they're a bit like Gunma in that their aim probably is first and foremost to avoid relegation. So they did that, but they may be a little bit disappointing compared to last year when they finished 10th. I mean, I really like the way that Kazuaki Tasaka makes the most of his resources, although I think that relies on a particular style some people might look down on, which I think you probably have experienced that as someone who watched Stoke in the Premier League. There are a lot of people who would disparage the way Stoke play, because it's completely wrong to think that there's only one way to play football. And if you're not trying to play, you know, beautiful attacking football, you're not playing football. There are different ways to play football. You've got to play the way that matches your resources and your squads. And Tochigi do that. And it works for them most of the time. Although it does mean that their shortcomings are evident. For example, their top scorer was their centre-back, Yasutaku Yanagi, with 8 goals. And I think they do enough to keep their heads above water without ever really being in terrible danger, but without any particularly impressive results. They're just kind of ticking along, which maybe that's okay. And I saw, last time I was on, I think we might have referred to them as a provincial team. And I can't remember who it was, but someone pointed out on Twitter that actually Utsunomiya has a very large population. And think about it, Tochigi is pretty close to the Tokyo metropolitan area. So although the club is run like it's got limited resources, perhaps they should be a bit more ambitious. But on the other hand, again, we don't know the ins and outs and what goes on behind the scenes, so I guess we can't really say too much. But Going back to Yanagi, he played all 42 games in full. Really impressive. I think he's the captain as well. He won, I saw on Football Lab using JStats that he won the most aerial battles in his own half in the league, and Yano won the most in the opposition half. So you kind of get the idea of where the ball is in a Tochigi match. It's mostly in the air. And yeah, that again, like, I'd like to have seen more from, you know, players like Juninho, who looks very different from when he was at Middlesbrough, and because he only got two goals. I'd like to see a bit more from him. But yeah, 14th is good for Tochigi. They should again, another team that will be pleased. I guess most of the teams that didn't get relegated will be pleased just because they didn't get relegated, because it was a real danger for many of them. But it wasn't ever really a danger for Akita. Akita had a tremendous year. Finishing 13th in their first season at this level and never really being in danger of relegation is absolutely fantastic. And I think Ken Yoshida could be a genuine candidate for manager of the year. And Akita, another team that people would look at them and say they're not particularly pretty football style. But again, they're a team that plays to their strength, and their strength is defence. And their defence is what earned them some really excellent results early on. Like, they beat Kyoto 1-0 in match day 5. They beat Nagasaki 2-1 in match day 12. The first half of the season was really good. It was better than the second half. And I think it was because teams hadn't worked out how to break them down. But once teams did figure that out, Akita didn't really seem to have much of a plan B. I think, and we've talked about this before as well, I think they lacked a bit of pace, and maybe they lacked a few goals. I think it's telling that Hayate Take was their top scorer. He got 7, but he only started getting longer appearances in September. So they were, you know, keeping it tight for the first half of the year, but there wasn't really anyone stepping up to lead the way in terms of the attack. I think their home form was pretty poor. They only won 3, but they drew 11. So if not poor, then frustrating, particularly for their supporters, I suppose. They had 12 1-1 draws this season, which I suggest, actually, to me, that I don't want to bang on about Akita's pitch, but it really is awful. Sorry, Martin, if you're listening. And I was thinking about, why is the pitch so bad? And presumably they maintain the pitch in that condition to disadvantage opponents who come and want to play beautiful, you know, passing football along the ground. But looking at Akita's results, it doesn't seem to have given them much of an advantage either. So maybe it's time to fill in the gaps in the grass. And also of concern was their goalkeeper Yudai Tanaka's form towards the end of the year. Tailed off quite badly, made some costly errors, and was dropped in the end, I think. But he did get 11 clean sheets, which was the best of all the goalkeepers in the bottom half of the table, or equal best. And he's been excellent for a year and a half, so I cut him a bit of slack, I think. But overall for Akita, absolutely brilliant year, and plenty to build on for next year as well, I think. They've got a really good chance to solidify their kind of status as a mid-table J2 team for a few years.
James, all these points are excellent, and you've made too many good points for me to really pick up on all of them. But I think you mentioned on Yamaguchi they kind of flew under the radar, and I think that's probably the way they would have liked it to go this season. All the focus was elsewhere, and the pressure was pretty much off. I think the key points were the manager change. The timing seemed weird at the time, but it actually was sort of a masterstroke. And also, I think Kensuke Sato in midfield, you mentioned bite and the aggression, and I think he's a player that sprang to mind because he can sort of do both. He's able to lose his head and start a 22-man brawl, but he's also a very, very dainty and technical passer as well, and that you don't get too many of those at J2 level who can do both. And I think him coming back from injury is important. And you also name-checked Yuki Kusano, who was out injured for a while and was very important and influential when he came back. So I think they had they were just about able to marshal their resources well enough to get out of trouble fairly comfortably, as you said. Akita and Tochigi, I think it's an interesting sort of analysis to take them together, because play style is fairly similar. I think, and it's about making the most of the resources in a quite attritional way. And I think the comparison with the Premier League era Stoke City, and I'll keep this brief because I could talk for hours and nobody wants that, but I think it's a lot to do with the idea that what Stoke fans would encounter was we actually had lots of really, really good footballers, because believe it or not, you can't get to become a professional footballer if you're not really good.
Yeah.
So all of the players, like, I mean, if you look at the league table, you know, Tokyo Verde and Blabath Akita are together, 12th and 13th in the table. Play style is completely different. And if you watch a game, you might go away with the impression that Verde players are a million times better technically, but they're not, because, you know, they're all professional footballers. They're all really, really good. It's a choice. It's a style. And there's no right or wrong way to do it. I think the problem comes when you mentioned with Akita specifically, that gets found out a little bit. And then you need a plan B, which we talked a bit about them lacking a kind of flair player. You know, they didn't have a Kensuke Sato type passer in midfield, for example. Obviously, now Eguchi was out injured for most of the season, which makes their achievement even more impressive, really. I think on Akita, you're right that they have the platform to build on for next year. I think they do need to be a little bit careful, because you also pointed out Yudai Tanaka's form tailing off in the last month or so of the season. I think the whole team tailed off with him. Mm. And I think they lost the last four in a row. Didn't they? So I don't think that was a bad enough finish to take the gloss over a pretty incredible first season in J2. But I think that does give them a lot to ponder for next year, because, yes, they sort of, to some extent, got found out a little bit tactically. And, yeah, they were on a bit of a poor run of form, you know, going into the tail end of the season. So, yeah, I think they'll be okay next year and do well again. But there are, as well as the potential to build on for next year, there's also a few warning signs, I think, a few red flags that need to be addressed as well. And, Tochigi, very similar. Some really, really good footballers there last year, like Kurosaki. And the Junki Hata, who's alone from Nagasaki, made a big difference. Even at Yohei Toyoda, who is very much a big sort of, you know, battering ram up front, he's not a bad footballer by any stretch of the imagination. You know, he's a really, really good, intelligent player, made a big difference. Obi in goal, you know, the loan market was used very well by Tochigi, I think. Bringing him in was good. Although I even thought, to be honest, the other goalkeeper, Shuhei Kawata, is really good as well, who ended up getting dropped. So, yeah, again, similar to Akita, plenty to build on for next year. I think where they would both like to improve, or where I think they both should be looking, is just scoring more goals next year, because I believe the more goals you score, the more chance you have of winning football matches. It's something I've noticed in the last sort of 25 years watching the game, James. Yeah, but I think, you know, this season, four teams were going to go down, or you know, the relegation zone had four places. It was going to be a bun fight. You could easily see a scenario where Yamaguchi, Tochigi, Akita would all be in that mess, you know, and possibly end up dropping down, and none of them have. They've all survived. And yeah, I think considering the resources at all three clubs, that is a pretty successful season for them. And they can enjoy a hard-earned winter break. I think, James, we are probably on the verge of a hard-earned winter break as well. So, thanks for all your analysis of the bottom half. We'll leave it there, and I'll get Stu on in a week or so. We'll talk about the top 12 teams from J2 2021. Before I let you finish, just as a closing comment, we had one quick question from Steve Fryer. He slid into my DMs on Twitter. So thanks for that, Steve. And he asked, who was our most impressive team and most disappointing team from J2 this year? And both of your picks are from the bottom half, or the bottom sort of 10 teams. So go for it, James.
Most impressive has to be Akita, for all the reasons that we just listed. To finish so comfortably high in their first year as a J2 team was really impressive. And full credit to Yoshida and the whole team, really, because they did play as a good team, and that's why they were able to do so well. They didn't just rely on one player to drag them. In terms of disappointing teams, well, obviously from a personal perspective, Kanazawa were disappointing for me. But if I try and be more objective, I would say probably Kitakyushu. Not because I was surprised that they struggled, but because of how good they were last year and how disappointing it was that their squad was kind of ripped apart and they weren't able to rebuild quickly enough. or to cope with all those losses. And I think it's a real shame that they've gone down. But, you know, not that much of a shame, because it meant that that was one place that wasn't filled by Kanazawa. So what do you think?
Yeah, to be honest, there are quite a few teams that impressed me. I don't know whether I was going into the season on a kind of some kind of massive downer about J2, you know, sort of glass half empty kind of scenario. But I think Akita's a really good shout. I even think slightly higher up, and this is getting into sort of part two of the season review territory, so I'll just mention by name as well. I thought Mito did really well again, and they lost a few players in the summer transfer window that looked like it might knock them back, but it didn't seem to faze them at all. Okayama, even at the end of the season, went on that really long unbeaten run, which was impressive. And if I'm going to mention long unbeaten runs at the end of the season, I've got to mention Jeff as well. I think even Ryukyu impressed me, especially the first half of the season. They're really good. So that's I've named like half the division there as impressive teams. So I've skillfully avoided answering the question. I think if I had to pick one impressive team, Steve, it would be Mito for me. Just because, as I mentioned, I think they're always likely to be. I can't use the provincial word again because it upsets some listeners. I get that, but I think you know, considering their resources to finish in mid table and play such sparkling footballs, very impressive job. Disappointments, there are two, and it's the obvious ones. It's Omiya and Matsumoto, but I will say in a weird way, Omiya are more disappointing because I expected them to be, as an absolute minimum, somewhere in the top half. Whereas for Matsumoto, I didn't really fancy them at all this season, so I thought they might be lower. Matsumoto being in the bottom half doesn't surprise me. Being rock bottom is shocking. But I think Omiya is the one where I just kept waiting. To be honest, once I'd seen Matsumoto a couple of times, I knew they were in big trouble. Whereas at Omiya, I kept kind of waiting for them to cut out the kind of dozy defending and lazy, you know, giving the ball away very cheaply and not doing enough to win it back. And that just didn't happen for months and months. So I think Omiya are the one that's, they kind of, Matsumoto's final league placing is very disappointing, but Omiya disappointed me like kind of existentially from start to finish. So I have to give them the wooden spoon, I'm afraid. Yeah, I know Steve's a big Omiya fan, so I don't know whether that might not be the answer he wanted, but yeah, I'm afraid that's the way it's got to be.
He's an Omiya fan, probably agrees with you completely.
Yeah, well, I think to be honest, this is something that I'm often too worried about upsetting fans of a specific team, but they're often the harshest critics, aren't they? As I've found talking to you about Kanazawa. So yeah, all good. All right, James, thanks very much. It's always a pleasure to get together and chat. And I think we avoided just repeating stuff we'd said during sort of regular season pods, which I was really pleased about. I was a bit concerned that we were just going to be sort of doing greatest hits, kind of.
I'm sure the listeners will tell us if we repeat ourselves too much.
Yeah, that would be valuable feedback, yeah, because then maybe next year we could just edit together clips of pods from during the season. It would save us a lot of work. But yeah, I think we were able to add a little bit more because there's no actual on-the-pitch action to speak of it right now for J2, so we could go into a bit more detail on each team. So yeah, thanks for your analysis, your insights, much appreciated. Hopefully we will be speaking again fairly soon, because I don't doubt that within decent haste there'll be some season, you know, 2022 previewing there to be done. So I hope I can count on you for some more help with the heavy lifting for that.
Yeah, that sounds good. It's going to come around quickly, isn't it? So
worrying. It's very troubling, but yes, it's sadly true. All right, James, thanks so much, man. It's always good to talk. And thanks as always to all the listeners and the downloaders. You know who you are. And if you support us on Patreon, support the JTalk podcast there, we really appreciate that too. It's helps us to keep things ticking over here. So thanks for that. And hope you enjoyed this part one of our J2 season review for 2021. Part two with Stuart Smith is coming soon, but data TBC, because he's a very busy man. So hope you enjoyed the show for this time, and we'll talk to you again soon. Bye for now.